Welcome back to another episode of Talking Moto, and holy smokes, today we have a lot. We have more injury updates we need to get to, sadly. We have lapper issues we need to talk to, possibly ruining a 450 championship level season here. We have track confusion, debates that are going around that I've been seeing. What should be taken out? What shouldn't be? What needs to be modified would probably be a better way to put that. Although some things, I did see one 250 rider talk about taking out and banning. We will get to that in a little bit here, obviously. But checking in from last week after Glendale, today we obviously have Tampa Bay. But just cleaning some stuff up from Glendale. Obviously, we had the big news come out right before I recorded last week of Jet Lawrence being out for the season and throwing a giant wrench in this 450 championship. We also had the introduction of the 250 East this week, which did not disappoint. Some guys from the 250 East are probably disappointed, but it did not disappoint for racing. Could have been better, but was definitely very exciting. For the most part, it was very close. Most of the races, there's a couple instances where it was kind of ho-hum type of deal, but then we had plenty of action all around the track at all points. So we will start this off here. 250 East qualifying. Max Anstey comes out making his, I guess you can call it his full season debut here on his new Monster Energy Star Racing Yamaha. Qualifies first with a 54.827. Just, what would that be, a tenth in front of the 250 West defending champion. Now here on the East, RJ Hampshire with a 54.978. Levi Kitchen, another guy who was supposed to be on the West this year, but forced to come East, not due to injury, but due to sickness, and came out and said he ended up having pneumonia right before Anaheim 1. If you remember back at Anaheim 1, he skipped the press conference, skipped the press day rides the Friday before, tried to go out for the free practice on Saturday, wasn't able to do it, and since he didn't technically qualify for Anaheim 1, he was able to pull out of the West Division and come East to start fully healthy and fully looking to win a championship that he let slip through the cracks last year. So he qualified in fifth with a 56.025. And then looking down the list, you start to see more and more competitors, high championship level competitors. Tom Vielle, your defending 250 East champion, qualified 10th with a 56.8. So he was 56.81 to a 54.2, just around 2 seconds slower a lap. Obviously, we all know Tom Vielle coming from the GPs, him winning a Supercross title before winning a Pro Motocross title. Pretty surprising in most of our eyes, definitely my eyes. I expected the success to come in outdoors before it came in Supercross, but it's come in Supercross before it came in outdoors. So, with that being said, last year, his season started off with him slamming on the ground in Turn 1 in Detroit, and that didn't happen this week. So, better than last year. And just one spot below Tom Vielle. In 11th, we had Chance Hymus, who is coming off of ACL surgery, qualified with a 56.817. And then Cameron McAdoo, while we're on the topic of ACLs, qualified 12th with a torn ACL. He said he tore it last week. He revealed that at the press conference on Friday. He said he just wasn't ready to pull himself out of the championship already. Kind of a little bit, I mean, no, not little bit. It is essentially the same exact situation Joe Shimoda is in with the broken fingers on the West Coast. Now, I think, not a doctor, haven't broken a bone, haven't torn a ACL. I gotta knock on some wood now. There we go. Should be all set now. So I don't know exactly what the feeling those guys are going through. I don't know the exact recovery time. How much can a torn ACL kind of recover on its own, especially while racing? Gotta assume not very much, if any at all. And this break that the 250 West is on is helping Joe Shimoda and his fingers. So, little bit of kind of the same situation going on. And then down in 14th, Austin Faulkner making his debut ride for the Triumph team. Best way I can put Austin Faulkner's day, I have it in my big takeaway section here, so we'll jump into this one big takeaway a little bit earlier than the rest of them. Faulkner was sick. I guess he had flu-like symptoms that he woke up Saturday morning with. So it's kind of hard to judge his debut ride fully, knowing that he was sick and he looked like he was struggling big time. He hit the ground multiple times, looked like he was struggling big time, especially in the sand, which is something we will get into in a little bit, because we had plenty of chaos in the sand. Many riders go down. I thought we were going to have two big factory nights end in the sand. It was only one in the 450 class. So, yeah, Austin Faulkner can't exactly just go, okay, well, he's going to be fighting for a top 10 guy for this entire season based off of round one. Now, last year, he did come out of the gates hot, winning rounds one and two before that vicious get-off he had in Dallas/Arlington. He was on the Pro Circuit Kawasaki team at that point, team he's been on his entire life. So now switching teams, whole new race day setup, schedule, just whole new everything. And then to pile it on, he's sick. We know the Triumph bike is a good bike because just the last West race we had, Jordan Smith went out, got himself a win on it. So it is a winning bike. Jalik Swole got a overall podium in the summer on it. So I have not lost my faith in Austin Faulkner, in his speed, or in the ability that you can have on a Triumph bike, just based off of what we've seen in the past. And now, especially knowing he was sick. So I don't think we can look too deep into Austin Faulkner ending his night in 17th. I did not think it was that bad. Yikes. I just said all this good stuff about him, and then I come out and say I didn't remember it being that bad or that far back. He had to have went down again, right? In the main event? Had to have. But I, that was the wrong app that I just went into, and that one's gone. Yeah. Yikes. I didn't, can't be laughing. Didn't think it was that bad, though. Yeah, problems for them. Okay. Off of Austin Faulkner now, because 17th place. Yikes. But anyway, push comes to shove, to wrap it up on Austin Faulkner, I still think he can, he'll be able to bounce back good, especially coming to Detroit. Hopefully gets the sickness out of the way. Even though being up here in Michigan, if you are sick, this is not going to be a fun place to be. Especially, I'm assuming they'll probably get in here Friday, Thursday, Friday, where it's going to be a low of 13 and 5, high of 27, 22, snowing. Yeah, probably not the best place to be when you're sick. And I've been here when I'm sick. Not very fun. So, getting into heat race number one. I almost just said main event number one on accident. My brain was stuck in triple crown mode. Heat race number one, RJ Hampshire went out, grabbed the whole shot. Tom Viel was right behind him. And then a mistake in, I do believe it was in the sand, caught up to Viel. Excuse me. That didn't really make as much sense coming out as it made in my head. A mistake in the sand by Viel allowed McAdoo to catch up to him, make the pass. RJ Hampshire just went out there, wins heat race number one, which, especially now hearing that he was still kind of doing a little bit of rehab and whatnot on that wrist, still feeling the lingering effects of the surgery. Now, he did have that surgery late because he was one of the late backouts of the West Region Division. So, still goes out, gets a heat race win. He did say he thought he was going to end his night in the sand in the heat race. He did not do that, though. He essentially ended his night in a different part of the track in the main event. But it was not the sand. Tom Viel ends it in third. Austin Faulkner, hey, sick or not, maybe dealing with a little bit of mental stuff, getting back in a race setting, qualifies right through to the main event, which is a good start to your night, obviously, qualifying in seventh in his heat race. Max Volin, big shout out to Max Volin. I can't remember if I talked about it last episode or not, but he is running two handbrakes with the nerve damage that he has in his right foot. He's got a little bit of, I guess, loss of feeling. That's an, I don't know if you'd call it a sensation or a sense of touch with his foot, essentially. Maybe it's, it can't be a strength thing, I don't believe. I'm pretty sure it was a feeling issue he was having, where now he has front and rear brakes controlled with his right hand, and then his left hand is still just the clutch. But he said they got it figured out for the most part. his main event did end a little bit early. Said it was nothing that the team could have done. Just, you can practice as many times as you want. You can think you have it dialed in perfectly. And then you get to a race setting, a race situation where things are coming at you a lot faster and a little bit more hectic on race day, where just something popped up where they didn't see coming. But overall, he did an interview in the tunnel after he got off the track. Seemed in very good high spirits, so that's good for Max Volland, someone coming into the pro ranks that he definitely had championship potential, and now he's on, you can call it a little bit lesser of a team with the club FXR, Club Muckoff, Club MX. There's a lot of letters in that sucker. On that team, that Yamaha team. So, Max Volland qualifies to the main, unable to finish it, but still very, very impressive of just being able to come back and race dirt bike still with the nerve damage and issues he has going on in his right foot. Main event number two, with this is where we started to get a little bit of hecticness going on here. Pierce Brown grabs the hole shot with Levi Kitchen and Chance Hymus right behind him. Levi Kitchen did end up, he had to pull into the mechanics area with a problem I don't think I've ever heard of. He thought his, well, I guess his bike did shut off. Turns out the choke got stuck on, and so they had an issue with that. He was in there just for a second, but still, when he got to pull into the mechanics area, never good. Was able to get out. And then with 1:54 left, Pierce Brown had an 8-second lead. Red flag comes out. Looks like there's two guys here that didn't finish the race. I am not sure which one it was. Vinny Lecuvi. I believe that's how you would pronounce his name. Probably not listening to this, so I don't feel so bad butchering it. And Bryce Shelley are the two guys who looks like didn't finish the race. But one of them it was coming off the, on the downside of the finish line jump, just had to just straight up eject themselves, and obviously that's never good to see, so they had to red flag the race. Pierce Brown, 8-second lead, and it vanished like that. Max Anstey made quick moves off the start, the restart, and ended up winning the heat number two after qualifying first. Levi Kitchen was able to get a fifth with pulling into the mechanics area, getting his bike situation figured out. Red flag, I'm sure, helped him quite a bit in that situation by bringing the pack back together. Chance Hymus, he surprised me in the heat race with a third overall. Pierce Brown with a second overall. But Chance Hymus seems like he just does all of his good work outdoors. That just seems like that's, especially last year before the knee injury, just seems to excel a little bit more in outdoors. I know he trains with the Lawrence brothers, now just the one Lawrence brother, and now maybe not even him. That's right, we got more injuries on the Lawrence brothers camp. So, things are not looking good for them. But we will get to the 250 main event now and leave all that 450 drama for the 450 portion of the show here. Max Anstey just keeps the ball rolling. Fastest qualifier, had a heat race win, and then just goes out, pulls the whole shot. We had three Star Racing Monster Energy Yamaha bikes up front with Max, Pierce Brown, and Daxton Benick. Sadly, it did not stay that way for the entire race. Pierce Brown went down hard in the whoops, caused a red flag situation for this. I don't have the timing of the red flag down here in my notes, but I think it was around 8 minutes or so left. So it really just became two sprint motos here for the 250 guys. But before that happened, RJ Hampshire, this is essentially where he ended his night and wasn't in the sand, like I said. It was the saucer-style tough blocks that they have in corners. He overjumped a triple, just went in too much speed, went over the top of that. His bike got hung up on it. His foot peg kind of tore into the cover, so his bike was stuck on it. They flipped that sucker upside down. His bike was upside down. I was sitting there like, oh my God, that's not good. You can't have his bike just sitting upside down like that when you're trying to get this flipping tough block off it. So they flipped it all the way out, rolled that sucker around all over the turn. He ends up going a lap down, and the red flag didn't help him whatsoever because it was a staggered start. So yes, it pulled the group closer together, but still, with it being just a staggered start and him being a lap down, he was going to have to go back, pass everybody once, and then start making his way back up through to make the passes really count. So he ended in 18th place overall, one behind Austin Faulkner. Like I said, I didn't think Austin Faulkner was that far down. I thought he was more 11 to 13 spot, but apparently not. But Levi Kitchen, he also kind of struggled a little bit. Finished 9th overall. It's just, I don't know, little confused, to say the least, on just, I don't know if Levi Kitchen wasn't gelling with the track, wasn't digging the sand. The whoops were insane. They were probably for about 3-4 guys on the track amazing, and then the other 16, 17, 18 guys the absolute biggest nightmare if the two sand sections weren't out there. The whoops were probably their biggest nightmare. But one interesting thing to note here. Oh man, my towel done did fall. That did scare me a little bit. One interesting thing to note here. Daxton Benick jumped on a Red Cross flag. He finished 2nd overall, was able to keep his 2nd overall position, but he was docked 5 championship points. So instead of being second in the championship with, I think it's 22 points, he is fourth with 17 points, tied with Tom Vielle, fourth and fifth, 8 back of Max Anstey. So it's not the biggest deal with it being round one, but still being back 8 points is not ideal. But especially with when you had the chance to be back only 3 points, I'm pretty sure it goes, yeah, it goes 25, 22, 20, 18, 17, 16 down the line. So it does suck, especially with it being in the 250 class, where obviously you don't have all the rounds. You only have half of them. I think it's 7 or 8. I can't quite remember off the top of my head. But like I said, we saw how the 250 East class started last year in Detroit, where our eventual championship winner in Detroit last year, he finished in 18th place. So you can look at that and say, hey, you can finish as worse as 18th and still come back to win the championship, which 18th place this week, RJ Hampshire. He has championship winning speed and ability with what he had last year in the 250 West, winning that championship. So Daxton Bennick, he can do it. Last year's only podium was also round one, where, like I said, it was a disaster going into turn one. In third place, Cameron McAdoo. It is just absolutely insane what Cameron McAdoo just seems to just be able to put his body through and not care whatsoever. This dude had one of the gnarliest crashes at Atlanta Motor Speedway a couple years ago, where there's a still picture. It looks like he's doing a freestyle trick where he hangs his feet up by the bars and he's standing up on the handlebars. He was just going flipping over a tunnel jump. And what's he do? He gets back up and he goes racing. So this man with a torn ACL going and getting a third, I expect nothing less than that from him, because it just, he seems like he's probably one of the grittiest racers that is out there right now. I think if there was I don't know how to put this, an award for the grittiest racer, I think it's got to go to Cameron McAdoo. Without a doubt, dude just doesn't seem to care about his body. I'm just going to say it. He does not seem like he gives two you-know-whats about it. But hey, when you're going out there getting third place, putting yourself in a good spot in the championship, especially now being second thanks to Daxton Bennick's mistake, the more power to you. So now, my big takeaways here for the 250 East round one. I touched on the Faulkner thing. Hit the ground a lot. Was also sick. Not really sure if we can judge his first round. Another guy, I don't know if we can judge his first round either, because we saw his heat race. He won his heat race, and then he makes one silly mistake in the main event. Obviously, this is main event is when it all matters, but he made one silly mistake in the main event, and then he was stuck in a corner for a lap with everybody going around him. That's RJ Hampshire. I don't think we can judge them too very fairly based on their round ones. I think they will both be back. RJ Hampshire, obviously, he had the speed in his heat race. So you just got to assume he'll be okay. Just one small mistake. Austin Faulkner, if he gets healthy during this week, I would like to assume that he would be able to come back and show what that Triumph is really able to do, like Jordan Smith was able to do in Glendale. Another one, Tom Vial. He was close to getting docked, I believe, during the red flag restart in that main event. Okay, we're back. Tom Vial, he was close to getting, in my opinion, and they talked about it on the broadcast a little bit, either position dock or points dock with that red flag restart, because it was Hamaker and McAdoo in front of him. Looked like one of them might have missed a shift, and Tom Vial was right up next to them, crossing that white line where you have to start outside on their back tire, not allowed to pass until you get past that white chalk line that they have on the track, just to make sure all the running order stays the same. And Tom Vial, granted, he was on the outside, but he was still very, very close to being in front of that front tire of, I believe it was Hamaker at that point still, who he finished right behind. One last thing that stuck out, I touched on a little bit earlier, was just Chance Hymus. Taking a look back at his past Supercross results. Now, obviously, we know all the podiums and everything that he got in motocross this past summer. His highest finish last year in Supercross was a fifth in Philadelphia. Cracked the top five one time. It was that time. His next closest was, he had 2 7s, 2 8s, 2 10s, a 15, and a 12. So he's just kind of always been fighting for top 10. I think now probably has a little bit more expectations on his shoulders for Supercross. Does he really deserve all those expectations in Supercross? I don't think so, especially looking at his past results and coming off of a big injury like his ACL injury he had. And then you look at all the past winners, not just the last two championship winners, just race winners in general that you have in this class. Max Anstey, Cameron McAdoo, Tom Vial, Levi Kitchen, Austin Faulkner, RJ Hampshire, and Chance Hymus has broken into the top five one time last year. What is his, how far back? Does he does not have any Supercross podiums. He did have 3 Supercross Futures, SMX Next wins. He had 3 of those back in 2022, and then 23 made his pro debut in Supercross. And like I said, no podiums so far as a pro in Supercross. And then he's kind of coming in little sort of championship hopes. And then we get 2 guys, 3 guys brought east, kind of last second type of deal for Chance Hymus. And now he's got to deal with even more race winners and championship level guys. So overall, I don't see Chance Hymus being a championship guy. Now that I say that, I'm going to look like an absolute idiot when it comes down to the last 2 rounds and he is out of it by 5 to 7 points or something. Also, I don't know why I keep using odd numbers. I never do anything in odd numbers. That's weird. Would I be surprised if he's in the championship hunt with 2 rounds left? A little bit, yes. But hey, ball's in your court, Chance Hymus. Prove me wrong. Looking at the points, talked about it a little bit earlier. Max Anstey obviously has the lead. 1 round in, everything's just going to look how it did at the end of the main event, except for that Daxton Bennick mistake. So we got McAdoo now planting himself in 2nd. Then Seth Hamaker. There's Bennick. Tom Vial round out the top 5. RJ Hampshire and Austin Faulkner down there. Faulkner 17, Hampshire 18. Pierce Brown, obviously the big struggle, big crash he had, and the whoops took him out of the race, finishing 20th. He got 2 points. Hampshire 4, Faulkner 5. It's going to be difficult for Faulkner and Hampshire to bring their names back here towards the top of this point standings. But, hey, like I said last year, Tom Vial got 18th round 1. He came back to win the championship. If anyone could do it, it could be RJ Hampshire. I got more faith in him than Faulkner, just with the whole new team situation that Austin Faulkner's got going for him. So now we are going to switch it up here to the 450 side of things. And Cooper Webb, not the fastest qualifier, but you know he's happy to be back east watching qualifying on TV. Track looked very, very rutted. Definitely a Cooper Webb style track, just taking the lowest rut possible, making his own, not even really using berms most of the time, just ripping it around the corners. But another guy from the East Coast was the fastest qualifier. Chase Sexton qualified first with a 54.179. And Cooper Webb was right behind him with a 54.543. So just 4 tenths slower than him. And Malcolm Stewart little bit of foreshadowing here, qualified third with a 54.751. And qualifying is when things did start to go off the rails for Eli Tomac, qualifying two at least, or qualifying session number two, made it seem like he qualified second. He qualified eighth with a 55.266, but about halfway through qualifying number two, he dabbed his foot, his left toe, and it kind of bent his foot ankle area in a little bit of a weird and awkward way. It hit and dabbed kind of two more times going up the face of a jump. It looked very similar to Jet Lawrence's dabbing of the foot torn ACL injury. It was the same leg that Tomac dealt with his torn Achilles on. So obviously, all that stuff is exactly what everybody's thinking. Oh no, this looked the same as Jet. He tore his ACL. Oh no, this is the same leg that he ruptured his Achilles in 2023. Right? Yeah. So, that is the point in the day where Eli Tomac's night went from looking at winning, closing down the points gap, to just straight up survival mode. Just do whatever you can to get a point. At least, and there was one point in the main event where I didn't think he was going to get a point. I thought he was going to call it quits early, but he didn't. He survived the whole main event, raced the whole thing. He could barely walk. There's a video of Eli Tomac circulating where he is barely even able to walk behind the gate to just pick out the gate that he wanted. So that is how much pain he was in. Yamaha called it just a bruised calf. It looked absolutely painful. There hasn't been an update provided yet that I know of at the time of this recording. So I'm really hope, well, okay, there was an update. All x-rays came back good news. So they came back negative, I think is how they say that in the doctor world. All x-rays were good news. He's going to do what he can, I guess, to line up in Detroit. Yeah, he was going into this race in a very good spot in the championship, right in the middle of it, and now he is faded back a little bit. But you can never count Eli Tomac out because the dude can still absolutely rip on a dirt bike. So, let's get into 450 heat number one. Aaron Plessinger seems like he made his first appearance into the Supercross season, where he finished second. He came out of qualifying in 14th. He finished second in his heat race. So looked like he joined the series for the first time in the heat race today. Saturday. That was very good to see. Not good to see was Hunter Lawrence didn't even technically start a lap because he got a little wide before the finish line jump coming out of that corner. Lands on a tough block and then went flying right into the face of the finish line jump. And he did provide a little bit of an update here on his Instagram. Bummed how the night ended. Sometimes that's the nature of this beast and what can happen when you're 6 inches closer to where you shouldn't be. Doing everything I can to be back 100% healthy. And thank you to my team who have been working super hard to get me more comfortable on the bike. I really feel like we are about to crack it. So obviously, not ideal. And yeah, nothing from Eli Tomac. Obviously, Eli Tomac's not the biggest social media person out there. So not very surprised that he's not posting anything on his personal Instagram. Not sure if the team has posted anything yet. So we will try and take a look here. I can't find anything. So, not good news for Eli Tomac. Not good news for Hunter Lawrence. That did end his race, end his night. Unable to score points. That's what I was talking about with the bad luck of the Lawrence brothers the last couple weeks. Jet going out in Glendale, and now hopefully Hunter is able to make the full recovery that he was talking about. Also, I did just see this and forgot to mention it. Pierce Brown broke his T5 vertebrae and had surgery yesterday so that he could get back to racing. Did not put a timetable out there. Once again, not a doctor. Not exactly sure how long that'll take. So I will go look that up real quick, and that will tie up our last loose end, as far as I know, that we have for the 250 side of things here. Okay, so what I was able to find real quick was recovery from spine surgery for a broken T5 vertebrae can take several months, including 6 weeks of recovery from surgery. That's when I did a little bit more digging. The original timeline that I saw was around 3 months to fully heal. If surgery is required, the recovery time may be longer. Okay, so hopefully, he did say surgery was required. So maybe 4 months? Again, that's just total speculation here, but hopefully we get to see Pierce Brown at the outdoors, in the outdoors at some point this summer. So that will officially wrap up our 250, and now we will get back on track here with the 450 heat number 2. Chase Sexton didn't get the best of starts, but Ken Roczen's night it was a worse start than Chase Sexton. Ken Roczen was down in the first corner, got into it a little bit with Mitchell Oldenburg on the beta team. Ken Roczen then, after the race, thought it was Benny Bloss. He had the right colors, the wrong guy. Honestly, nothing really Roczen could have done besides maybe just get a better jump. He just kind of got pinched off a little bit. There was, he had Mitchell Oldenburg on the inside, Justin Cooper on the outside of him, and he was just stuck between a rock and a hard place. And he cracked, really. Wasn't able to squeeze all the way through. Didn't hold back, and he thought he was going to be able to hold in the middle there. Wasn't able to happen. Goes down. He was able to get up and qualify in seventh, straight to the main event. But Justin Cooper did get the hole shot, did lead for a while. Sexton was then able to go on, make a pass for the lead with, once again, Malcolm Stewart, little foreshadowing here, got second in the heat race. So, big takeaway here was the fact that Lee Diffie tried to jinx Kyle Chisholm by talking about how many main events Kyle Chisholm would have. And then Kyle Chisholm did not qualify through the heat race. So it was almost all on Lee Diffie. The old announcer's jinx almost came to get Lee Diffie. But no need to freak out. Chiz did chiz in the LCQ and qualified that way. So now, 450 main event. Looking at it big picture here. We're in Tampa Bay. Last time they were in Tampa Bay, Chase Sexton had the lead. Going through the whoops. Crashed it away to Cooper Webb, who was applying some pressure. No way that can happen now. That was back in 23. Sexton, smarter, more patient guy. No way that can happen. Well, it happened. Just not with Cooper Webb this time. To start it off, Eli Tomac barely being able to walk, somehow finished in 17th. So he was able to go out there and salvage 5 points out of what easily could have been a disaster of a night, getting 0 points. Which there was a point where he was in dead last. I thought Tomac's just gonna say, can't do it, getting off the track. But, hey, he pushed through. He got himself 5 definitely hard-earned points. He deserved those 5 points. Of course, waking up Saturday morning, you're not thinking, holy smokes, hopefully Eli Tomac can go out there and just get 5 points. But his dirt bike racing, that's what happens. but back to the guys in the front. Chase Sexton got the best start he's had all season long. Pulls the hole shot, got a great jump. Not as good of a jump as he got in San Francisco last year in the mud, but it was a good jump. Grabs his first hole shot, and honestly, at that point, I thought, hey, Sexton doesn't have Jet Lawrence to worry about. Saturday night didn't have really Eli Tomac to worry about. Didn't have Hunter Lawrence to worry about. His focus was most likely just all Cooper Webb. Got to worry about Cooper Webb. That's it. He went out. He did exactly what he needed to do. Got his hole shot. Started running away with it. But man, Malcolm Stewart was going double, triple, into the whoops, carrying an insanely ungodly, insanely amount of speed into the whoops, through the whoops, through the left-hand bowl turn, and then that set him up good, ripping through the sand. He was flying in that part of the track. Sexton had a different line where he was just going double and then into the whoop, so he had a lot less speed. And then the whoops came back to get him. Goes down in the whoops in Tampa with the lead, with a little bit of pressure being put on from behind. Same thing happened last time they were there. It was Cooper Webb. This time, it's the hometown kid, Malcolm Stewart, going on and winning his first ever 450 Supercross main event at home in Tampa. James Stewart, his brother, obviously, in the broadcast booth. They are now the first set of brothers to ever win a 450, or I think it was, I can't remember if the stat was a 450 or if they just worded it to be a premier class. Let me, the 450, okay, 450 main event win. Two brothers. A lot of people thought it was going to be, oh no, premier class, excuse me. On Saturday night, Malcolm and James Stewart became the first brothers in Supercross history to win premier class main events. James Stewart won his first one in 2005. And now, 20 years later, Malcolm Stewart goes out, wins himself a 450 main event. But like I was saying, a lot of people probably were expecting Hunter Lawrence to get it done because we know the success that Jet has had. But the Stewart brothers beat them to the punch, and Malcolm Stewart was definitely the fastest guy. He had the fastest lap time by 0.3 of a second. Nobody was touching the speed pretty much that he was carrying through the whoops. The whoops won Malcolm Stewart this race. Something about that last name and the whoops. You can go really fast, but sometimes you better hang on pretty tight. So big congrats to Malcolm Stewart winning his first main event. And now it's time to get into the lapper conversation, a little bit of the sand conversation. We'll start it with the sand. No, we'll start it with the lappers because that's got more to do with the 450s specifically. It's got everything to do with the 450s. Ken Roczen, Cooper Webb, they were battling coming up through the pack. This was for third place. Chase is in front. Malcolm's in second. Webb's in third. Kenny's in fourth. Webb's able to get past the lappers. I believe it was going into the corner after the whoops, the left-hand bowl corner, and then you got the deep sand rhythm section that's in air quotes, air bunnies there. So Cooper Webb's already past the lappers, and then Roczen thought he was going to be able to just go right in between them. But no, Roczen and I believe it was Jeremy Hand both kind of get a little squirrely. Still, you got to say the lapper, I don't know why he was in the middle of the track. There was one lapper all the way on the right side on the tough blocks. I don't exactly know why Jeremy Hand was close to the middle of the track, especially with blue flags out. Him and Kenny collide. Then Kenny, kind of his bike and himself, go over to the right side, take out that other guy who was on the far outside edge of the track doing the right thing. Roczen goes tumbling, gets up. Luckily, he got up, ran back to his bike like he was healthy, tried to start his bike, couldn't get it in neutral, but it didn't matter because in that collision, his chain fell off. Like I said, he was running in fourth, ends up with a DNF, ends it in 21st place. So that would be 1 point. Ken Roczen got one singular point out of this weekend. I believe he was down by three at the most, maybe even two. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head. To Chase Sexton in the championship lead, and now he is down by 18. And this championship just became a two-headed race, I believe, with Eli Tomac having his struggles in qualifying, forcing him to have the struggles in the main event. Ken Roczen having his struggles in the main event, only getting a point. This one incident with the lapper in the deep, deep sand might have cost Ken Roczen his last really good, legitimate championship opportunity. He's not getting any younger, Ken Roczen. This is the best he's been through the first four rounds. First four and a half rounds, if you count the first half of this main event, he was looking like, you can't say 2017 Ken Roczen before that big crash at Anaheim 2, because he went out, he won A1, and I can't recall the second round, probably either San Diego or San Francisco, one of the two. He went out one back-to-back. He wasn't that Ken Roczen, but this is probably the best Ken Roczen we've seen since 2020, probably. And he had a legit chance at the championship. Definitely could have gotten top three in the championship. And now it's essentially just all gone. He's just hoping for other guys to have issues, bike breaking issues. Obviously, nobody's rooting for injuries, but that's just something Ken Roczen will need now to get back into this championship. Cooper Webb said they should start having penalties for lappers, either money or position. It's difficult to find an answer because there's some guys who seem like they are very good. They know this isn't my race. Yes, I could be in a battle right now, but these top three guys that these blue flags are out for, everyone's here to see them race. They're not here to see me race. And then there's just, I feel bad putting it all on Jeremy Hand, like I am, essentially. But, I mean, shoot, man. It kind of is. If you think about it, it seems very much like it's all on Jeremy Hand. And it's probably the most he's ever been talked about on social media during his racing career. Obviously not for good things, but hey. Dean Wilson was the talk of the town when he wouldn't get out of Ken Roczen's way. Maybe Ken Roczen isn't as likable as we all think. Nobody seems to get out of poor Ken Roczen's way. No lappers seem to care about Ken Roczen. I'm joking, of course. Ken Roczen seems like a great fellow. But yeah, back to the main event. Chase Sexton goes down in the whoops. That just ended his race. He went from, there had to have been something wrong. I couldn't find anything where he said anything happened. He just tweeted out kind of an inspirational thing in a picture about, not about how you something, I don't know, like get up, or it's all about how you get up, not how you do something else. Hell if I know, if I remember. Where is that sucker at? Oh, also, random side note, Tough Block took out a cameraman trying to find, or trying to follow Ken Roczen off the track. Chase Sexton, we are not judged by our success, but rather how we respond to failures. See you in Detroit. That's all he said on that matter. Obviously, it was just a really bad mistake that he had now two times in a row in Tampa. I tweeted out right away, Chase Sexton and Tampa whoops do not mix good together. So, I think it's big takeaway time here. Eli Bruce-Kaff from qualifying, he could barely get through the whoops. Talked on it a little bit earlier. Actually, now looking at it, all my big takeaways, I've found a way to touch on them all. Eli Tomac with his Bruce-Kaff, very impressive, getting 5 points. Barely able to get in through the whoops. I'm sure that sand was absolutely miserable for him, but he was able to get it done. Hunter Lawrence looked like a collarbone at first. They were taking him off on the back of the Alpine Stars medic little cart. He did have a neck brace on. It looked like it was a collarbone issue at first. I know he's had some shoulder issues before, so it'll be interesting to see how he's able to respond to this, if he's able to respond in Detroit to this. Ken Roczen championship could be cost due to lappers. Sexton and Tampa whoops equal bad. It's exactly what I have, and that is exactly what happened. Malcolm Stewart, first career win. And then the last one was Jordan Smith came out and asked if we can ban sand. This is Supercross. I do believe were his actual words that he used. Jordan Smith. Jeez, oh Pete, why are there so many people named Jordan Smith on Twitter? I don't remember his, if I look up dirt bike, I don't think that's going to help me. Is this it? Nope, that's definitely not it. Interesting. Yeah, I can't find Jordan Smith's Twitter here. Very, very interesting. But yeah, he said something along the lines of wanting to ban sand and how it's supercross and whatnot. Just what about no, maybe? I like seeing the sand. It throws a big wrinkle in everything. Zach Osborne is on my side. He said sand sections and tunnel jumps should be mandatory at every track. Obviously, I'm not out there riding. I just think it makes it for... Oh, here we are. Jordan Smith. Can we ban sand sections? Might as well add a rock garden, is what he said. I mean, I don't think it's as bad as adding a rock garden. It's not enduro cross. Obviously, I know he's exaggerating a little bit, but keep the sand sections. It's Tampa. They always bring in the deep sand for Tampa. I'm assuming they're gonna continue to do it. Maybe it's just gonna be a little bit smoother next time, but it's gonna be beach sand when Supercross goes to Tampa every single time. So now, points here for the 450s. Sexton is able to extend his points lead just miraculously. I think he got about 3 more points on it. He's now got Cooper Webb sitting 5 behind him, and then Jason Anderson sitting 17 back, Roczen 18, and Tomac 21. Like I said a little bit ago, I think it's just become a two-headed monster here at the top between Sexton and Webb. And while we're on the topic of Webb, he is my 450 pick here in Detroit. I think he's going to go out here and dominate. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes out and dominates. Looking at the track, we have a long, sweeping, right-handed first turn. And we got another sand section for a turn. So Jordan Smith might not want to watch this week either. Also, I can't figure out what side of the stadium is what, because they don't have where the tunnel is on the track map here. So yeah, there is, I always like to count the 180 corners, because that's where we get some passing going on here. 1, 2... Yeah, we're going to count the sand section. 3, 4, 5-ish. We'll call it about 6.5 180 turns that we got rocking. So, give me Cooper Webb and give me Tom Vial for my 250. Cooper Webb 450, 250, Tom Vial. It's going to be exciting. Always love racing in Detroit. Early start this week. I saw Race Day Live is at 9:30 Eastern, I believe, and racing kicks off at 3 p.m. Eastern. So we got an early one this week. Very excited. Anything on Twitter, X, hit me up, talking_moto on there. Yeah, like always, questions, comments, likes, subscribes. If you hate this, leave a comment. Doesn't really make a difference for me. I would still like some interaction. Also, if you hate this, we're about an hour and 15 minutes into this sucker. Man, you could have turned this off a long time ago. But yeah, talking_moto on X. hit me up on there, and we will be back next week talking a little bit of Detroit Supercross. See ya.